Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
You fit?
Yeah.
Don't tell me fibs.
Yeah.
Glad to hear it. Glad to hear it. So how was day one of the convention?
Excellent.
That's great. And the dinner last night?
Excellent.
And the headache this morning? Glad to hear it. So for those who weren't with us last night, a couple of important things happened last night. Of course, firstly, we presented our BCA awards, and the David Blyth Award went to Professor Ron McCallum. Ron's not with us this morning, but it was terrific that he came down from Sydney with his wife, Professor Mary Crock, and they were here for the dinner last night, and great to have that opportunity. And if you missed that, then we'll certainly be replaying it off the website very shortly. Also, certificates of appreciation awarded last night. With a touch of sadness, we awarded a certificate of appreciation to Patricia Stillman, one of our members from Queensland, and Pat's been particularly unwell, and we wanted to take the opportunity to acknowledge her fantastic work, particularly for our members and blind people generally in Queensland. And Ricky Chaplin has custody of that award and will be taking it up to Pat at Hervey Bay in the not-too-distant future. Jenny Dawson from Western Australia also received a certificate of appreciation, and of course Jen has been very active in recent years with her work with the National Women's Branch, and in particular with putting together their magazine Aspirations, and it was great to have Jenny on the phone last night. And one of our award recipients was in the room, and again, Lynn Eagers, we congratulate you on your certificate of appreciation. So a busy night, and of course we took the opportunity to farewell Professor Fred Schroeder, who by now is probably going through the process of customs clearance and so forth at the airport on his way back to the West Coast. Fred actually leaves here on Sunday morning the 15th, arrives in San Diego in time to do a full day's teaching on Sunday the 15th. So, okay, Helen Ferris, are you in the room? Helen, we didn't get the opportunity last night to acknowledge the fact that we, when we announced the renaming of our member support program to BCA backers, it was in fact Helen who came up with that nomination. So congratulations, Helen, and thank you for that. I also haven't had the opportunity, Helen, to catch up with you to congratulate you on your election to the board, and I look forward to working with you in that capacity. Now, are Dan and Doug in the room?
No.
That's good. I'm glad they're not here because I actually want to talk about them.
Well, they mustn't smell too good yet. Apparently that was the reason.
No. There is class action, legal action being organised for those of us who were defamed several times. So if you'd like to join that action, you know, Dan thinks he can get away with this because he's a big city lawyer. Doug thinks he can get away with what he says because he can go back to that, island, the prison camp of Tasmania. But we're going to get him with a class action. So if you want to be in that, come and see me. Okay, thank you, Emma. Could you pass Emma a roving microphone so that Emma can do an acknowledgement of country for us this morning? Because Stephen Belbin has done a fantastic job, but I just want to make sure that our smart CEO behind you... But thank you, Emma. Yes. Would you do an acknowledgement of country for us?
Stephen, I'm sorry I won't do a very good job compared to what you would do. But yes, I think it's important that each day of our events that we do acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which we're meeting today. Stephen could tell you more about who they are. I can't actually recall. But thank you, Stephen. And I'd like to acknowledge elders past, present and future. Thank you.
Thanks, Em. How many people have got a white cane with them today? Well, display it, because it is International White Cane Day. So be careful where you wave it, but I think it's appropriate that we acknowledge International White Cane Day. and of course the importance of the white cane. It would have been great to have Dr. Fred Schroeder with us for today, because of course the NFB in America was the organisation that was very instrumental in that, the development of International White Cane Day. And in the US, the President of the US usually, I haven't checked whether our current President of the US has put out the message, but the President, thank you, but the President makes a public statement about the importance of white canes as part of the day. Okay, down to work. Yesterday we heard from one current world president in Dr. Fred Schroeder, and of course, as you know, Fred is the president of the World Blind Union, an organisation that works very closely with the World Blind Union is ICEVI, International Council for Education of Vision Impaired. We're delighted that we have the president of that organisation with us. It was a little bit easier to get this person to attend because she actually lives here in Melbourne. Frances Gentle is someone I've known and worked with over many years, and I know her as someone who works through the Royal Institute for Deaf and Blind Children in New South Wales. She's been a very active member of the Roundtable on Information Access and the Australian Braille Authority, but she's also had an abiding and long-standing interest in international work, and through SPEVI, another acronym, we've got to get rid of them, don't we? South Pacific Educators of the Vision Impaired, and through other initiatives through the Institute, Frances has over many, many years been involved with development projects in the Pacific Island nations. She's currently the president of ICEVI, and that's an honour that is greatly deserved because of the work that she's done in this field. So we wanted to take this opportunity to invite Frances to join us this morning and to tell you something about the work of the organisation that she leads. As I say, ICEVI works very closely in partnership with the World Blind Union, and in fact, they conduct their World General Assemblies as a combined event with some sessions for each organisation. So that it is that close a working relationship. Ladies and gentlemen, would you make welcome Frances Gentle.
Good morning, everyone, and thank you to John. That was a very nice introduction. John and I met up at the Australian Blindness Forum, which took place just a few days back in Canberra, and I see a few faces around the room of people who've travelled from Canberra to Melbourne for this event. So as John mentioned, the International Council for Education of People with Visual Impairment works in partnership with the World Blind Union. We've established a thing called the Vision Alliance, which also includes the International Agency for the Prevention of Blindness, which in many countries is known as Vision 2020. So our Vision Alliance is ICVI, World Blind Union, and IAPB. So I'm quite interested in the theme of today, which is getting life ready. So I'm planning to tell you a little bit about ICVI, but then I'm actually going to end with an activity, and I'm going to get you to be with a partner. So just contemplate that around your tables, because some of you are sitting with chairs between you and others at the table. But don't worry about that for the
just
minute.
Remember, we've also got an internet audience.
And we have an internet audience who will definitely not be able to access this activity, but never mind. So some of the things that will be of interest to the people in this room, BCA, which are activities of ICEVI, we have a website, and on that website there are many publications which are all accessible, and they relate to education of children with vision impairment globally. And each of the publications is on a theme. Our mission is to promote education of children with vision impairment around the world, and we work mostly in developing countries. In our region, in the Pacific, the chair of ICVI is a young man called Ben Clare, and some of you may be familiar with Ben's work across the Pacific Island countries. Also on the website, we have a mathematics textbook called Mathematics Made Easy, which is for teaching mathematics to children in schools, children with vision impairment. And we also have some joint position statements with WBU on education and braille literacy. And as John mentioned, we have our joint general assemblies. The next one will be in 2020. So at the moment, there's an expressions of interest out for organisations that may be interested in hosting that very large event, as you can imagine. Some of our projects. We have a very successful higher education and transition to work project in East Asia. And we're currently working on developing a series, about 200 videos, to explain the concepts that are in our mathematics book that's on the website. And that's an ongoing project that we hope to complete by 2020. We're working at the moment to get the funding for a technology project in Africa, and we hope to provide different assistive technologies to children with vision impairment in 10 African countries, but that's an ongoing challenge to get the funding required, but we're hoping that that will happen in this before 2020. We've also just completed a teacher training curriculum with the help of Kevin Carey and Kay Farrell. I'm not sure if you know Kevin. He's quite well known in the blindness sector. And that teacher training curriculum will be delivered via mobile phone technology. So next month I'm off to UNICEF in New York to present this teacher training curriculum, and UNICEF are going to trial it in their different offices around the world, because we want it to be accessible. It will be in HTML format, and it will be downloadable onto a phone or an iPad. So once it's up there, I'll let John know, and you might wish to trial it yourself. We'll be very keen to know what people think about it. And our big one has been our global Education for All campaign in partnership with World Blind Union, which has now been going for 32 countries. All right, now I'm conscious of the time because I really want to talk about getting life ready. And I'm an educator, so whenever I speak, I tend to like to do something that's an actual activity. I find that people remember things that they actually do. So I want to talk about touch. And I want to talk about the importance of touch for getting children life ready. Touch is the foundation of everything. The touch is an establishment of relationships. Touch is establishment of reaching out into the world, becoming engaged in learning, wanting to communicate, socialise. It's the one of the foundational things that we humans do. And for children with vision impairment, children with deaf blindness, children with additional disabilities, sometimes they're touch defensive. They don't actually want to reach out. And for some of you that might be working with children with deaf blindness, and I see Irene is in the room, it's touch cue symbols are a very important part of establishing communication. Now, Deborah Chen, who's a very famous researcher in America, talks about three types of touch. Social touch, which is about cuddles and relationships, human bonding with loved ones. Active touch, which is where children reach out. They reach for objects, they reach out to grasp, they reach out into the world. So that's a really important one. And passive touch. And passive touch is what happens to a lot of children. And it's what we educators do and people do as part of training of children in educational settings. Passive touch could be helping a child to reach out for a tap, wash their hands. It could also be encouraging a child to learn braille. So it's where you have someone else assisting someone with touch. Now, I want to just talk a little bit about passive touch. So before I do, I would like you to position yourself with somebody. And for most of you, there's someone right there next to you. So if you could just spend a minute to determine who's going to be your partner. And the table just in front of me has two blank chairs. Some of you may not have a friend or might be on your own. And I'm going to get John to be my buddy in a minute. Okay, here we go. And for those who don't have a buddy, you can just... experience this through John and I. Okay, so John's my buddy, and if John could just come to the microphone with me.
This is the best invitation I've had for a long time.
So, we're going to do some different types of passive touch. Now, the first thing you're going to do, and I'm going to do it with John, is I'm going to talk about hand over hand and hand under hand touch. And the first one is going to be hand over hand. So I'm going to grasp John's hands from above, and I'm in control, and I'm going to lift his hands up and put them down a couple of times. So I want you to do that with your buddy. It's as simple, you've got your hands over the top and you're controlling the hands of the other person, up and down. You are doing the moving. All right. Okay, here's the next one. Everyone listening? Ready? You ready? Drop, let go of the person's hands. Okay. Call to order. Thank you very much. Hand under hand. Now this one, I want you to slip your hands under the person's hands so that you are not controlling them and you are raising their hands. Okay, so you are just guiding their hands up and down from underneath. Okay. Now, I'm going to ask John. Thanks, everyone. I'm going to invite John to tell us what he thought of those two experiences. And because we don't have time, I would love to hear from you, but I think we're short on time.
So it's actually about control, isn't it? It's about the fact that the hand over hand, Francis had very much control, what I would call direct control of my movements. With the hand pushing up from underneath, she still was managing the movement of my hands, but I felt that I could disconnect from that at any point I wanted.
Good, good, thanks. Thanks. Okay, so there's a hand up. Have we got a bit
we
short on time?
Yep.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Hi.
And if you tell us your name,
yep,
please.
It's Crystal. I just wanted to say that I noticed when we were doing that exercise, if it was when we were doing the hand over hand exercise, it was harder for me as a person who can't see to explain to the person whose hands were under mine what we were actually touching because I couldn't feel it. Whereas when my hands were under his, I could say, well, you know, there's the cup, there's the notepad, there's the pen. And then it was his choice whether he wanted to actually find those objects. So there you go.
You're jumping one step ahead
sorry,
of me.
Sorry. Take it away.
Now, so hand over hand and hand under hand are really important if you've got a Braille learner. And often in schools, I see people grasping the hands of a child and saying, I want you to read this, and pushing the hands around. It's like someone grabbing my head and pushing it around saying, look here, look there. You know, it's the same thing. You want to put your hands under the hand of the child and just position them in the spot you want them to learn and then leave them to it, want them to read.
We're hearing that.
Okay, now, following on from the comment we received, this next activity, I want you to find something that you're going to introduce to your partner. So it could be those canes, or it could be a device, something that you're going to introduce to your partner. And again, I'll ask John to come up the front. What will we introduce, John? Glasses, okay. We're going to use his spectacles, or a pair of spectacles. Now this time, as before, I have a pair of glasses in my hand and I'm going to introduce them to John using hand over hand and I'm going to be in control. So I've got his hand, I take it to the glasses and I'm not letting him hold those glasses, I'm just letting him feel them. I'm controlling his hand and I'm moving his hand over the glasses. So he's not getting to grasp them and feel them. All right, that will be the first thing. The second one, and I'm going to leave you to do these two different techniques yourselves, hand under hand. I take his hand, position it on the glasses, and then I'm going to leave him to hold them and explore them himself. So again, it's a matter of who's in control. Okay, have you got something? Away you go. Hand over hand, hand under hand.
Yep.
All right, call to order. Thanks, everyone. Now, once again, I'll invite John to give his views on those two approaches.
Thanks, Frances. Interestingly, the first one where Frances was taking control, I'd have to say that I had no idea of what the object was. I knew that it had certain characteristics of smooth surfaces for the lens and so forth, but you didn't get an overall concept of what the device was. Whereas in the second trial, because my hand was free to explore, I had the sense of, okay, this is it. I can see the relationship between the two sides of the glasses and the arms and so on and so forth. So that's the difference from my point of view.
All right, thank you. Now, I was just saying to John, if there's a, you know, could we have some input from you? But he thinks it's a challenge with lack of microphones. So, returning to my overall point, teachers, whether you are an educator, whether you're a parent, you will all be in a position to influence the way children reach out to the world. So I encourage you to, whenever you have a chance to advocate on the behalf of children, to really encourage them to be in the driver's seat of learning. We don't want learned helplessness. We don't want passive, tactile, defensive kids. We want them to be ready for life and to reach out and grasp with confidence. So that's enough from me. So I'm looking forward to the day. Thank you, John.
Thank you, Frances. And it was great to hear firstly about the work of ICEVI and then more an exercise of some of the strategies that are used. And it's interesting that while Frances's exercises were designed around children learning to live with their blindness or vision loss, of course, the same concepts apply to us in terms of how we're treated as adults. Think of the number of times that someone has tried inappropriately to guide you. And think of exactly the same strategies in terms of putting your hand on the person's elbow so that you have the freedom to understand what the direction they're taking, where they're going and so on and so forth. Think about the strategies of where people help you, in inverted commas, into a seat, as distinct from where they put your hand on the back of the seat and let you find your way into it. You know, Pete Seeger, the famous folk singer, told a story once, which I can't let go past, Frances, about the three wise men in the ancient times. And they were old and wise, but they were also blind. And the circus came into their country and they were asked to go and explore the elephant. And the first one found the leg and reported back, "Oh, sire, it's so much like a tree trunk. It's firm and it goes up into the sky above my head. I don't know how far, but it's definitely solid and must be tall." And the second one comes back and says, No. I felt along the flank, as they called it. And it was like a giant building, a house, but with soft fur on it. And the third one said, "I think you're both wrong. I found this rope from heaven and I pulled on it and the rains came down." Frances, it is a delight to have you with us and a delight to have the energy that you bring to us. It's taken a while for that to get through to some people. It is a delight to have you with us and the energy you bring to us on a Sunday morning after some of us were far too late to bed last night. So thank you for that enthusiasm. Thank you for what was a very practical demonstration of some of the thinking that is behind education of young blind children in less developed areas and so on and so forth. Ladies and gentlemen, would you thank Frances?